Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
And Wisconsin stood up and said loudly that justice does not have a price. Our courts are not for sale.
Judge Susan Crawford wins a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, defeating her Elon Musk-backed opponent. Musk spent over $25 million on the most expensive judicial race in U.S. history. We'll go to Wisconsin for the latest. Then Trump's escalating war on universities as he moves to cut more than $9 billion in federal funding to Harvard and Princeton. We'll look at the turmoil at Columbia University, which capitulated to demands from the Trump administration. We'll speak to former Columbia law professor Catherine Franke.
A lot of people have been calling me and saying, what the heck? What's going on at Columbia? We thought it was bad, but now it's worse. You've got another president? What's up with that? Well, I think it's fair to say that what we've seen is a coup. We've seen the trustees, the board of trustees, go rogue and put in one of their own people as the acting president in violation of the actual statutes of the university.
Plus, Trump's immigration crackdown is coming under increased criticism after the administration admits it mistakenly flew a Salvadoran father living with his family in Maryland with protected status to a mega prison complex in El Salvador. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israeli attacks killed at least 41 Palestinians over the past 24 hours as Israel's military announced a major new ground offensive. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said his forces will seize large areas of Gaza for so-called security zones. The announcement came as Palestinians face widespread food insecurity with Israel's total blockade of the Gaza Strip continuing for a 31st day. On Tuesday, Gaza's residents were unable to find bread after all the territory's bakeries, including 25 run by the World Food Program, shut down operations.
I came here before dawn and went to all the bakeries in the area, but they were all closed. So I came back here in front of this bakery, hoping that God will bless us with bread. What can we do? Let them bring us flour and fuel. Why are they preventing us from getting them?
Hamas said in a statement, Gaza has reached a famine phase, calling it one of the worst humanitarian crises in modern history. An Israeli military agency that coordinates aid deliveries to Gaza wrote on social media Tuesday, quote, there is enough food for a long period of time if Hamas lets the civilians have it, unquote. A UN spokesperson was asked about that claim.
Israel says there's still enough food that was delivered to Gaza during the ceasefire. What is the UN's response to that?
As far as the UN is concerned, that's ridiculous. I mean, we are at the tail end of our supplies, of the UN, of the supplies that came in through the humanitarian route. You know, WFP doesn't close its bakeries for fun. If there's no flour, if there's no cooking gas, the bakeries cannot open.
UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric. Elsewhere in Gaza, The Guardian reports some of the bodies of 15 Palestinian paramedics and rescue workers killed by Israeli forces and buried in a mass grave last month in Gaza were found with their hands or legs tied and had gunshot wounds to the head and chest. The Trump administration says it'll deploy a second aircraft carrier, the USS Carl Vinson, to the Middle East amidst U.S. airstrikes on Yemen that have killed over 60 people since March 15th. Overnight, U.S. attacks reportedly killed at least four people in Yemen's Hodeidah region. In related news, the White House says it's moving on from the scandal in which National Security Advisor Mike Waltz mistakenly shared plans to attack Yemen over the commercial messaging app Signal with Jeffrey Goldberg, editor-in-chief of The Atlantic.
As the president has made it very clear, Mike Waltz continues to be an important part of his national security team. And this case has been closed here at the White House as far as we are concerned. There have been steps made to ensure that something like that can obviously never happen again.
Meanwhile,
and we're moving forward.
Meanwhile, The Washington Post reports members of President Donald Trump's National Security Council, including Mike Waltz, have conducted government business over personal Gmail accounts and another apparent violation of security protocols and federal records laws. A federal judge has ruled in favor of Mahmoud Khalil, allowing the Palestinian Columbia University student protest leader to challenge his detention and deportation in a New Jersey court. The order is seen as a victory for Khalil, as this is the second time a federal judge has denied the Trump administration's request to transfer the case to the state of Louisiana, where Khalil has been held at an ICE jail for nearly a month. His legal team continues to fight for his release. In a statement, Khalil's wife, Dr. Noor Abdallah, said, quote, "This is an important step towards securing Mahmoud's freedom, but there is still a lot more to be done. As the countdown to our son's birth begins and I inch closer and closer to my due date, I will continue to strongly advocate for Mahmoud's freedom and for his safe return home so he can be by my side to welcome our first child," she said. Unions from across the United States gathered for peaceful actions Tuesday outside more than 10 ICE jails nationwide, protesting the Trump administration's targeting of immigrant university students and faculty. The Service Employees International Union condemned the abduction of two of its members, including Tufts University graduate student Rumeysa Öztürk, by masked federal agents in broad daylight earlier this month. Öztürk is a lawful visa holder from Turkey. This is SEIU President April Verrett.
What we know about Rumeysa, she holds a valid student visa. She also wrote a op-ed for her student newspaper not long ago in support of the Palestinian people, utilizing her First Amendment rights in this country to express her opinion, totally in keeping with the values that this country purports that it stands on. Yet, being taken away in handcuffs by men in masks and in hoodies. She's not the only SEIU member either. We know about our sister, Llewellyn, 64 years old, a lab tech in Washington State and member of Local 9-to-5. After living in this country 50 years, she's being detained by ICE.
In Germany, immigration authorities in Berlin are moving forward with the deportation of four young foreign residents over their involvement in Gaza solidarity protests. In a joint investigation, The Intercept and 972 magazine report the orders are set to take effect in less than a month. Three of the protesters are citizens of the European Union, while none have been convicted of any crimes. Their cases are drawing comparisons to the Trump administration's use of deportation to target Palestinian rights protesters. Republicans will hold on to their narrow majority in the House of Representatives after winning a pair of special elections in Florida Tuesday. In Florida's 6th congressional district, Republican State Senator Randy Fine has defeated Democrat and public school teacher Josh Weil to claim the seat vacated when Trump appointed Michael Waltz as national security advisor. Weil dramatically increased Democrat share of the vote in a district Trump won by over 30 points last November. Meanwhile, Republican Jimmy Patronis has defeated Democrat Gay Valamont to win an open seat for Florida's 1st congressional district in the Florida Panhandle. Valamont's share of the vote increased by 10 percentage points over the November election when she lost to far-right Republican Matt Gaetz, who would later be nominated by Trump as attorney general, only to resign from Congress over sex trafficking and drug scandal. Patronis is Florida's chief financial officer. He previously called for public funds to be used to pay for Trump's legal defenses in his four criminal cases. In Wisconsin, liberal judge Susan Crawford defeated the Trump Trump-backed candidate, Brad Schimmel, on Tuesday to claim a pivotal Wisconsin Supreme Court seat, capping the most expensive judicial election in U.S. history. Crawford's election will have far-reaching impact on issues including abortion, voting rights, and congressional redistricting, which could change the balance of power in the U.S. House of Representatives, where Republicans hold a razor-thin majority. Judge Crawford overcame at least $25 million in spending by Elon Musk, the world's richest man, who told supporters at a town hall in Green Bay Sunday night that, quote, the entire destiny of humanity rested on electing Brad Schimmel. Crawford spoke to reporters after casting her ballot at a Madison polling station.
The involvement of Elon Musk specifically is something I did feel that I had to comment on, particularly when he started, you know, engaging in shenanigans like paying voters to sign petitions and giving away $1 million to, you know, obviously pre-selected people supporting my opponent. I don't think that's democratic for a billionaire to use his wealth in that way.
We'll go to Madison, Wisconsin, after headlines to talk about Tuesday's elections in Wisconsin and Florida. The Trump administration fired about 10,000 federal health workers across the Department of Health and Human Services Tuesday, gutting agencies tasked with protecting the nation's food and drug supplies and safeguarding public health. The cuts will affect the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Food and Drug Administration, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and several other health agencies. Overnight, entire research divisions and offices were eliminated. The White House says President Trump will unveil new tariffs on imported goods from a broad range of countries today, a date Trump has called Liberation Day. Ahead of Trump's announcement, Chinese state media reported leaders of Japan and South Korea had agreed to coordinate their response to any new tariffs with Beijing. Trump's trade war continues to rattle stock markets around the world. Over the weekend, the Wall Street giant Goldman Sachs raised its projected chance of a recession over the next year to 35%, up from its previous estimate of just 20%. New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker's broken the record for the longest speech ever delivered in the U.S. Senate. Booker's 25-hour protest of President Trump and his policies surpassed Strom Thurmond's 1957 filibuster in defense of Jim Crow. Beginning Monday evening, stretching until late Tuesday, Booker repeatedly warned of Trump's attack on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, his economic policies, mass deportations, the power of billionaires like Elon Musk, and more.
John Lewis, so many heroes before us would say that this is the time to stand up, to speak up. This is the time to get in some good trouble, to get into necessary trouble. I can't allow this body to continue without doing something different, speaking out. The threats to American people and American democracy are grave and urgent, and we all must do more.
Again, that was the New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. The Trump administration's withholding tens of millions of dollars from 9 Planned Parenthood state affiliates that provide contraceptives and other vital reproductive health care, predominantly to low-income and people of color. The providers received notices this week stating their Title X funding was being temporarily retained due to possible violations of Trump's policies against diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI efforts. Health and Human Services has given the providers, which operate dozens of clinics nationwide, including in Indiana and Kentucky, 10 days to comply with Trump's demands to eliminate DEI initiatives. In a letter, HHS pointed to mission statements and other public documents that highlight the clinic's, quote, commitment to Black communities, unquote, as supposed evidence of their noncompliance. Meanwhile, in a victory for reproductive rights, a federal judge has ruled Alabama cannot criminally prosecute individuals or health care providers that help pregnant people to travel out of state to obtain abortions. Alabama has a total abortion ban with no exceptions for rape or incest. This all comes as the U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments today in a case brought by South Carolina that seeks to expel Planned Parenthood clinics from its state Medicaid program. Those states are largely already prohibited from using Medicaid funds to provide abortions. Planned Parenthood says the move violates the Medicaid Act's free choice of provider provision. In more related news, the Trump administration's gutting USAID for reproductive health and family planning programs in dozens of global South nations. The move is expected to impact some 50 million women who will be cut off from contraceptive access. And federal prosecutors will seek the death penalty against Luigi Mangione, the 26-year-old suspect in the shooting death of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi made the announcement Tuesday, describing Thompson's killing as, quote, an act of political violence, unquote. Mangione's lawyer said in a statement, quote, the Justice Department's move from the dysfunctional to the barbaric, unquote. Upon his return to office, President Trump vowed to resume federal executions after they were halted by the Biden administration. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Wisconsin, where liberal Judge Susan Crawford defeated the Trump-backed Brad Schimmel for a seat on Wisconsin's state Supreme Court in the most expensive judicial election in U.S. history. Many viewed the race as a referendum on Elon Musk, the world's richest man and Trump mega donor, who's been heading the Trump administration's efforts to dismantle key federal agencies. Judge Crawford won 55% of the vote, even though Musk spent over $25 million on the race to help elect Schimmel. On Sunday night, Musk gave out $1 million checks to two Wisconsin voters, one of whom happened to be the chair of the Wisconsin Federation of Young Republicans. Judge Crawford made a reference to Musk during her victory speech.
As a little girl growing up in Chippewa Falls, I never could have imagined that I'd be taking on the richest man in the world. Justice in Wisconsin. And we won. And Wisconsins stood up and said loudly that justice does not have a price. Our courts are not for sale.
While Democrats are celebrating the results in Wisconsin, as expected, Republicans won two closely watched House races in conservative districts in Florida, but the races were much closer than in November. Joining us from Madison, Wisconsin, is John Nichols, the nation's national affairs correspondent. His new article headlined, Wisconsin Rejects Musk's Money, Trump's Lies, and the Right-Wing Assault on the Judiciary. And John, overall, I think it's being estimated that there was something like $100 million spent on the state judicial race. Can you talk about the significance of the liberal Judge Crawford's victory by quite a large margin?
It was quite a large margin, Amy. And let me tell you, I don't think we can overestimate the significance. Going into this race, when people would ask me about it, I would say there's no middle ground. If Crawford wins, it will be a huge signal that Americans are rejecting, obviously, the money that Elon Musk is using to try and buy elections. But also, they're rejecting the direction of the Trump administration. On the other hand, if Brad Schimmel had won, it would have been taken by Trump and Musk as, you know, a total vindication for what they're doing. The reason that was so is because Wisconsin is an absolute battleground state. It's incredibly closely divided. In the last seven elections, five for president of the United States, five have been decided by under 30,000 votes. So this is a state where things are usually very, very close. But it wasn't that way on Tuesday. Susan Crawford did win by the better part of 200,000 votes. She did win that 55-45 victory. And what's perhaps most significant is she won communities and regions of the state that had voted for Trump just 5 months ago in a very, very high turnout election. So as I suggest, I just don't think you can overestimate the significance. This is a huge signal from a battleground state that Americans are genuinely upset, genuinely angry, I think, with Trump and with Musk.
And John, that wasn't the only race in Wisconsin. There was also an election for state superintendent of public instruction. What happened there?
Well, you're sure you're exactly right, Juan. And the race for superintendent of public instruction, which is the state's top education job, and is a very significant job. It's the post that current governor Tony Evers held before he became governor, was intensely fought. It was a battle between the incumbent, Jill Underley, who has been an absolute supporter of public education. She's a former rural educator, versus a woman named Brittany Kinzer, who was supported by the Republicans and who was supported by advocates for voucher programs that would take money out of public education. Very clear choice. Kinzer had a lot of resources. She was backed by a lot of the same campaigners that were out there for Brad Schimmel in the Supreme Court race. And Jill Underley won. It wasn't quite as big a victory as the Supreme Court race, but it was roughly a 53-47 victory, a very clear, solid win. So in both statewide races, in the battleground state of Wisconsin, the clearly progressive candidates won.
And John, could you comment on the results in the two congressional special elections in Florida?
Sure. Those are important elections because, you know, special elections in the first weeks of a new president's term often give us an indication of, you know, kind of where sentiment is going. Now, these were heavily gerrymandered districts. They were designed to elect Republicans. There was no question of that. And the prospect that a Democrat would actually win one of these seats was pretty hopeful on the part of any Democrat who thought that would happen. However, there was a huge shift in both of the Florida districts toward the Democratic candidates, both of whom, by the way, were not, you know, famous people per se or, you know, particularly powerful figures. And they were running against very prominent officials in Florida on the Republican side. And yet what we saw is that counties in rural and more urban Florida that had actually been, you know, pretty supportive of Trump, in some cases shifted toward the Democrats. And overall, it was a result that I think Democrats can point to and do a sophisticated analysis. Essentially, what they need to say is this. Look, these weren't districts that we were going to win, but these are districts where you could get a measure of where the sentiment is moving in the United States. And that's what I would say. Remember, we have a lot of congressional districts across the U.S. that Republicans hold, but that are much, much more closely divided. It would be an easier run for the Democrat. So if you see this kind of shift in districts across the country in 2026, there's simply no question that the Democrats would take the House of Representatives.
So, again, those were two special elections in Florida for the seats of the embattled National Security Advisor Mike Waltz and for Gates, who was named as Attorney General, nominated by Trump, but then ultimately had to pull out and pull out of Congress around various drug and sex scandals. But I wanted to go back to Wisconsin for 1 minute and ask not only the significance for the country. I mean, if you take what Elon Musk said, he said it's for the future of Western civilization, but his candidate was defeated. But what this means, for example, in particular about abortion rights, as the Democrats keep the majority on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, John.
Sure. In Wisconsin, it was a very, very clear choice. Susan Crawford has been a very strong supporter of abortion rights for a long time. She, in addition to being in the past a lawyer for labor unions, she was a lawyer in cases brought by Planned Parenthood. And so there was no question of where she stood on the issue, and she put it front and center in her campaign. On the other hand, Brad Schimmel is a longtime Republican politician who had been very closely associated with the anti-choice position and, in fact, was backed by ardent advocates of a ban on abortion rights. And so the choice couldn't have been clearer. And I think that there are always people who like to tell you that abortion is fading as an issue, that as time passes, you know, perhaps it's not as resonant. But when I was talking to voters yesterday, I was struck by the very strong turnout of young voters, I was at a polling place on the University of Wisconsin campus shortly before the polls closed. And there were literally young women running in to cast their vote, trying to make it in time, you know, before the closing of the polls. And in talking to these folks, you found a number of them were putting the issue of abortion rights very high on their list. So I think it continues to be a very resonant issue.
To ask you about all this money that Elon Musk is pouring into these political campaigns. I mean, talk about taking Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision, putting it on steroids. Your sense of the legality of all of this, of offering $1 million to particular voters?
Sure. This Musk spending and the way he did his spending has been incredibly controversial in Wisconsin. The attorney general did bring an action against him. Other legal groups have been, you know, raising this issue. It didn't get litigated before the election. But I don't think there's any question that there's going to be a continuing examination of how Musk spent his money and of real questions of whether there were violations of Wisconsin election law. But there's something deeper as regards all this one. Even if it was legal, what we need to understand is that we had a situation in Wisconsin where the wealthiest man in the world tried to buy an election. He poured his money in as roughly $25 million in addition to all these other gimmicks, all these other stunts. And I think that a lot of political analysts would have told you, well, that's going to win because money wins in politics. But that didn't happen in Wisconsin. So when we talk about the significance of this, beyond the legalities, there's a political significance. The message out of Wisconsin is that Musk's money doesn't win. And that message matters for Democrats, obviously, going in to the 2025 fall elections as well as the 2026 midterm elections. It also matters for Republicans in Congress because there's no question Elon Musk has tried to intimidate them by threatening to use his money to punish any Republican that stands up to Donald Trump's agenda. Well, now those Republicans have a counter narrative, another piece of information which says that, yeah, maybe Musk's money could protect you in a primary, but it might not be enough to protect you in a general election. And so we've got a very significant signal out of Wisconsin about money in politics in general and about Elon Musk's money in particular.
I mean, it is remarkable that one of Elon Musk's $1 million recipients went to the chairman of the Wisconsin College Republicans, a person who had worked for Ron Johnson to get him elected, and in the fall of 2024 worked as for Turning Point Action, Charlie Kirk's group. But I want to turn to Texas for 1 minute as we wrap up. In an interview with the New York Times, Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries accused Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott of slow walking a special election to replace Congressmember Sylvester Turner in Houston, who died last month. This is really significant. I mean, it looks like Abbott is not going to call a special election, at least at this point, but will keep it open, this seat, which would most likely go to a Democrat representing Houston, of course, until the November 2026 election. We just have 30 seconds.
Sure. I've written about these issues a lot in the past. Governors playing with special election dates. It is an absolute assault on democracy. We need to understand that congressional seats, House seats, are filled in elections. They aren't appointed. And so when you have a governor of one party saying, we're not going to let people elect a successor to a member who has passed away, that governor is saying that I'm going to leave you, the people of a major American city, unrepresented for the better part of a year and a half. It is absolutely unacceptable, and Texans should be raising an outcry about what Governor Abbott appears to be doing.
John Nichols, we thank you for being with us, the nation's national affairs correspondent. We'll link to your various articles at democracynow.org. Coming up, Trump's escalating war on universities. Stay with us.